The Lord be with you.
And with your spirit.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to St. Matthew. Jesus began to address the chief priests and elders of the people, once more using parables. The reign of God may be likened to a king who gave a wedding banquet for his son. He dispatched his servants to summon the invited guests to the wedding, but they refused to come. A second time, he sent other servants, saying, "Tell those who were invited, see, I have my dinner prepared. My bullocks and corn-fed cattle are killed. Everything is ready. Come to the feast." Some ignored the invitation and went their own way, one to his farm, another to his business, and the rest laid hold of the servants, insulting them and killing them. At this, the king grew furious, and he sent his army to destroy those murderers and burn their city. Then he said to his servants, "The banquet is ready, but those who were invited were unfit to come. That is why you must go out into the byways and invite to the wedding anyone you come upon." The servants then went out into the byroads, and they rounded up everyone they met, bad as well as good. And this filled the wedding hall with banqueters. When the king came in to meet the guests, however, he caught sight of a man not properly dressed for a wedding feast. "My friend," he said to him, "how is it you came in here not properly dressed without your wedding garment?" The man had nothing to say. The king then said to the attendants, "Bind him hand and foot and throw him out into the night to wail and grind his teeth." The Gospel of the Lord. Last expression of the gospel: many are called, but few are chosen. In seminary, we used to say about getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning, "Many are called, but few get up." And that used to be the problem with the ringing bells around there. And while that is a part of the challenge, there are indeed many more. Looking at all of these Gospels, a number of people have asked me recently, "Are you chapped at us, or are you mad, or what?" You know, and I say, "Why? Well, the preaching, you know." No, I'm conscious of the fact that we're kind of running out of time, you know, and particularly the deaths of some great people making me more and more conscious of that reality. And those Gospels are pretty classic. And they're all leading in one to another, and the reason I go back over and remember one week to another how important that material is and how it relates, and we remember how all of those parables relate one to another. Going to the person speaking directly, forgiveness, there is just one reward. We should be pulling for everybody to get that reward from the Lord. That's what the laborers in the vineyard is about. And then he told another parable, just in case you don't get it. He said there's a man and two sons. And they knew exactly what he was talking about. There was no disillusionment at all about the reality. And one of them said, "Yeah, we'll go and work in the vineyard." The other said, "No," but later on he thought better and came back and worked. The first one didn't go. The religious leadership and the priests. It's the constant struggle in life. The constant struggle in the church in the modern world. The constant struggle in the Catholic Church. Hey, we had our heyday maybe in the 50s, 60s, and we had churches that were full all over the country. But to what end? What has it brought? It's a pretty important question. Because our expectations were limited and clericalism took hold, and certainly we limited the expectations and the hopes. limited them greatly. It was sufficient to show up, and as many people would say, and to bring your envelope. And the church was pretty accepting of that reality. And we had the adage to pray, pay, and obey. To pray, pay, and obey, and that was it. We didn't expect a great deal beyond that, and it was up to you to do a lot of personal growth, and the church kind of directed it from above. That's clericalism, classic. And now what do? We've survived and we lived through that. The biggest objective in my parish growing up was, how in the world do we get all of these people out so that we get the next group in at 9 o'clock, and we had mass at 8 o'clock and 9 o'clock and 10 o'clock and 11, and we took a break maybe 12, 15. But load them all up. Where has it landed us? What is it all about? Why do you come week in, week out? And this parable, wow. You like it? You like it? Wow. Man, there'll be something wrong with us if we really like it, you know? It's a lot of infusion and confusion, right? But it's a great challenge to us. And it certainly brings together many of the aspects that he has been talking about to the religious leadership. First of all, we look at the prophet Isaiah. He anchors the opportunity for this parable to take hold. He says, on this mountain, the Lord of hosts will provide a great banquet for all of his people. He will welcome and invite all of those who want to be a part. There'll be no pressure, no push, no nothing, just an invitation. All to come, have choice wines and fruits, and celebrate on this mountain. And when he does it, the veil will be removed and all will be seen. The veil that veils all people. And that happens in the gospel. He takes away the veil. Pretty important. And so Jesus comes along and he is giving directions at this particular point through these parables to the priests and the religious leadership, giving them all of these teachings. And now he comes, he said, let me try this again. Another parable. Another parable. The kingdom of heaven is like a king who put on a banquet for his son, a wedding banquet, a celebration. And he invited all of these people, and they didn't show up. So he sent out Uber to get them, right? Well, no, he sent out another group. He sent out another group to invite them and say, hey, y'all were invited. What's your response? What's your response to the banquet? A wedding invitation always has an RSVP attached, right? Pardon? Yes, sure. Respondez, s'il vous plaît. Please respond to this invitation. The kingdom is no different. RSVP. And so he said the king sent out his servants, invited the people a second time, saying, hey, the fatted calf is killed. The celebration is ready. Do you want to come? And they ignored the invitation. Wow, that was the kicker. They ignored the invitation. One went off to his farm, another to his business, another one went off to the football match, another one went off to the seaside, another one went off to the social event, another one went to the barbecue. They were pretty busy. They had an awful lot going on. Really. And they didn't understand the invitation. But it was the history. It was the history of Israel. That's what he was talking about. He said the people of Israel were invited. They were the chosen people from the outset. And they were invited. And they were invited again. And they were invited again. And those who were inviting them, they wiped them out. They killed them. They mistreated them, manhandled them. And then did not accept the invitation. And then there's a little piece comes in the parable. How do you explain that? Hey, he got chopped off, right? And he sent his soldiers in to burn their city, destroy their temple, and take out the people. How do you explain that in the parable? Is that God? Is that the God you believe in? It's pretty important. That is an explanation. Matthew completed his gospel probably around 65 to 70 AD. Second gospel, Mark's was the first. Traditionally, we used to say Matthew's was the first. Now, pretty clear, Mark's was the first, and then Matthew's came a little later. Somebody who was a little overly enthusiastic, you know, got in and added it to the gospel as it went around. It's the most likely understanding. It wasn't there in the gospel to begin with when Matthew presented or when Jesus told the story. Jesus didn't say, my heavenly Father is going to whack you all and take you all out, you know. Didn't act like that, no. Somebody else came along and they added it after the fall of Jerusalem. It seemed like it fit perfectly, those three lines, that it fit in there between those two things that he was saying. And so it became added in local areas and then eventually was right there in the heart of the gospel. Is that the guide that we believe in? No, it's not. But there were a lot of enthusiastic people who thought about that. And when they saw the destruction of Jerusalem, they said, hey, this is God's wrath on his people. Hey, I heard a lot of preachers saying very similar thing when we had Katrina in New Orleans. This is God's wrath on the people there. Hey, the problem is God had an awfully bad aim then, you know, if that was true, because he sure didn't hit the places, you know, that are associated with being decadent or sinful or anything else. Hey, the war that was hit was the real poor people. People in poverty. Is that our God? No, but we like to push those agendas and push those things off on God. And so, in the time of Jesus, it really wasn't a whole lot different. People got really excited about that and said, hey, that's God. That's God doing that. If that's my God that is doing that, then hey, I don't want to have anything to do with that particular God. I mean, sensible people would not. That is not the God that we are responding to or serving. So a little overly enthusiastic energy brought that about and slipped it right in there. And people say, well, it's there, it's in the gospel. Yes, that's how they came about. They came about from ordinary people in ordinary times and ordinary circumstances. And some people felt this was really a part of the agenda. Hey, Paul's letter's the same. There's lots of addendums in there. And so we begin to understand that. Then we pick up the story. He says, okay, so they didn't respond. They went off. They ignored the invitation. And we take out that little snippet that was put in. And then we say, then he sent his servants out and he said, hey, go and find everybody that wants to come. Extend the invitation to all people. There was no hiccup, no difference, nothing unnatural about that. That was exactly the way it had happened in the history of Israel. They refused the invitation, refused it again and refused it again, and wouldn't pay heed to the prophets. And so he said, hey, this kingdom is open to all people. Everybody who wants to come to the banquet is invited. Everybody. And so they invited everybody they could find in the highways and byways. Notice, good and bad alike. Good and bad alike. Every single individual invited. Little problem. When I heard this third piece, that's probably a separate parable, that again was an attempt to try and make it look like it was all one. No, it was never all one and the telling of Jesus. But perhaps a totally separate parable. The king comes into the banquet and he sees an individual not wearing his wedding garment and he says, my friend, what are you doing here not wearing a wedding garment? It's a little disturbing, isn't it? Pardon? Sure it is. When I first heard it as a boy, we had a little book in elementary school, The Parables of Jesus. And when we read that and we had to learn and be able to reproduce it to the best of our ability for the teacher and for each other, always had a little issue with that. Why would you invite somebody and then tell them go away? Answer is simple. Just didn't see it. It's the very thing that we've been talking about. Put on the garment. And people would say, well, hey, he was invited to come in off of the street. How could he go ahead and put on a wedding garment? How did all the other people put theirs on? It was available at the door. That was the kicker. And you know what the wedding garment was? An openness to change. It was as simple as that. Why come to the wedding garment and have no desire or openness or intention of changing? What's the value and what's the purpose? There is an RSVP attached to this. And it is the very thing we've been reflecting. Having an honest desire and an openness and willingness to change. Or to allow the Lord to change me. To get out of my own smallness and come into the abundance of the Lord. Now, that's a different parable. That's a different story. And so it begs the question, hey, week in, week out as we come, hey, here we are, we're the 27% that is left coming on a kind of a regular basis in the Catholic Church. Hey, unless we are open to change and unless we are open to putting on the garment, we will certainly bring our participation level down to 16% in no time flat. We have a responsibility to an upcoming generation. It was passed on to us. We have had glory days. But it begs the interior question. What things do I need to let go of so that the Lord could really do something in my life? What am I willing to let go of? And conversely, what am I unwilling to let go of? That's the determining factor at the door. Am I in this or am I in this?